Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Monday, June 29th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as outfielder Rob Refsnyder was placed on the 10-day IL with inflammation in both of his knees. Refsnyder was the Mariners' lefty killer, though he hasn't killed many left-handers this year as he's had his worst year against southpaws. But in Refsnyder's absence, third baseman Weston Wilson should see more time in the lineup versus left-handed pitchers. In a corresponding move, third baseman Buddy Kennedy was recalled from the minors after being acquired via trade from the Giants yesterday. Now we have a whole string of injuries to relievers. Reliever Richard Lovelady was placed on the 15-day IL with a tricep strain, and his teammate, fellow southpaw reliever Mitchell Parker, was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. The corresponding moves in the Nationals bullpen will be the recall of reliever Riley Cornelio and reliever Carson Palmquist from the minors, but with two lefties, Lovelady and Parker, that have played a big part in the Nationals bullpen this year, reliever PJ Poulin will be the top left-handed option in the Nationals bullpen. Next, reliever Anthony Bonda was placed on the 15-day IL with a lat strain. Bonda is expected to miss multiple months as it's a pretty significant strain, so we likely won't see Bonda until the end of the year, if not until the playoffs, if the Twins make it. Reliever Cody Lawyerson was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, reliever David Morgan was placed on the 15-day IL with knee inflammation. He's on the Padres, and in a corresponding move, reliever Bradley Rodriguez was recalled from the minors, and he is rightfully back in the majors after pitching very well before his previous demotion. Next, reliever Keegan Aiken was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow discomfort. Not great news for Keegan Aiken. He has not been spectacular this year for the Orioles. Reliever Josh Walker was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. And the last reliever move, Ethan Roberts was placed on the 15-day IL with forearm inflammation. Reliever Gavin Hollowell was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. And another Cubs news, outfielder Matt Shaw was placed on the 10-day IL with a hand sprain. It's a mild sprain, but Shaw could be held out through the All-Star break, just given the vicinity we are in to that break. So with Matt Shaw out, outfielder Kevin Alcantara was recalled from the minors, but Pedro Ramirez should see the biggest influx of playing time due to his versatility. He can play both the infield and the outfield and is a switch hitter. So Pedro Ramirez should see more playing time. And lastly, we have a couple of injuries to some A's players as outfielder Tyler Soderstrom was placed on the 10-day IL with a hip impingement, and shortstop Jacob Wilson landed on the 10-day IL with thumb inflammation. With Wilson out, shortstop Darryl Hernaiz was recalled from the minors, but he's likely to be the A's backup utility infielder. We also saw the promotion of shortstop Joshua Kuroda-Grauer, who was selected from the minors. He's expected to be on the short side of a second base platoon with Jeff McNeil, the top 10 prospect of the A's, according to Baseball HQ. So Joshua Kuroda-Grauer in the majors for the A's. He had three hits in his MLB debut, but you're probably wondering, okay, if Hernaiz is not replacing Wilson at shortstop and Kuroda-Grauer is going to be on the short side of a second base platoon, then who's taking over at shortstop? That's going to be Alika Williams, who's been covering for Wilson at shortstop during the first few days of his absence as he dealt with shoulder soreness before landing on the IL with the thumb injury. So Alika Williams should be the A's everyday shortstop moving forward. And for replacing Tyler Soderstrom, we'll see Carlos Cortez and Colby Thomas perform in a platoon in left field as Jonah Heim gets everyday playing time at DH. In terms of transactions, outfielder Teoscar Hernandez was activated from the 10-day IL today. He or yesterday, excuse me, he was out for a month with a hamstring strain, and he returned to being the Dodgers' everyday left fielder, forcing Tommy Edman to second base and Alex Freeland to the bench. Outfielder Ryan Ward was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, shortstop Cameron Colley was recalled from the minors. He's the Rangers' number 13 prospect. He batted 262 with 8 homers, 29 steals, and 100 WRC plus as a 23-year-old at AAA. So not the best hitter in the minors, but Colley definitely has some speed, has a little bit of power potential, is not super low in the or super high in the strikeout rate. So there's definitely some potential for Cameron Colley. He should see most of his time at second base versus left-handed pitchers, but he doesn't have anywhere near a full-time role. But with Colley on the roster, that will allow Evan Carter to see fewer at-bats versus southpaws, as we'll see a bit of a mix around of the lineup with Ezekiel Duran likely moving to the outfield. And in a corresponding move, outfielder Jared Kelnick was designated for assignment. Next, starting pitcher Chris Paddock signed a major league contract with the Rangers after being previously DFA'd by the Reds. In a corresponding move, reliever Joe Ross was designated for assignment. Next, second baseman Jake Cronenworth was activated from the 7-day IL after missing almost 2 months with a concussion. Cronenworth will return to being the Padres' everyday second baseman, which means second baseman Sung Mung Song will get less playing time and second baseman Will Wagner will head to the minors. And lastly, shortstop Nick Allen was activated from the 10-day IL after missing 3 weeks with a hamstring strain. Allen will return to being the backup utility infielder as second baseman Raynel Delgado was optioned to the minors. And in terms of news, second baseman Marcus Semien has a hip flexor strain, and it was deemed to be a grade 3 strain, meaning Semien will miss a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks with the hip flexor strain. Big blow to his season and the Mets season, which is already in disaster territory. Brett Beatty will continue to see everyday playing time at second base for the Mets. Next, outfielder Addison Barger suffered a setback in his recovery from elbow inflammation. He now has a stress fracture or reaction in his back and will be shut down for a couple of weeks. Barger has had his season decimated by injuries, and it doesn't look like he's going to be back anytime soon. Next, starting pitcher Tanner Gordon is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today to start versus the Marlins. Gordon pitches for the Rockies. He's been out with a hip impingement for a month, and that's not a start I'm going to be targeting. Next, closing pitcher Emilio Pagan is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today, and he'll return to being the Reds' full-time closer after missing about 7 weeks with a hamstring strain. It was a very significant strain, but surprisingly, with Pagan out, nobody claimed that Reds' closer role. I really hoped it was Graham Ashcraft, but he's injured. Tony Santion's injured. Nobody really stepped up, so Pagan will return and have his role in a full-time capacity. Next, shortstop Jeremy Peña is expected to be placed on the 10-day IL with a calf strain that's being described as mild, so Peña should miss the minimum 10 days. The recently activated Nick Allen will take over as the Astros' everyday shortstop until Peña returns. Next, starting pitcher Brandon Pfaadt is expected to be recalled from the minors to start versus the Giants today. He could stick in the rotation until Michael Soroka returns from the IL, so not clear how long Pfaadt would stick in the rotation. He has pitched to a sub-2 ERA in 3 starts at AAA as he's fixed his control issues, but I don't think Pfaadt is the guy that was once a top prospect for the Diamondbacks. He's not somebody that you really need to go running to the wire to pick up. And lastly, starting pitcher Noah Schultz is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL tomorrow to start in Baltimore. He's been out for a month with patellar tendonitis. So Noah Schultz returning to the White Sox rotation via a start in Baltimore tomorrow. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 13 games on our slate. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with catcher Hunter Goodman, who did all he could, but the Rockies lost to the Marlins. He went 2-for-5 with a run, a double, a home run, and an RBI. It was his 26th homer of the year, and it traveled 442 feet at 107 miles per hour. It was Goodman's MLB leading 13th home run of June, and he's now stands alone for second in baseball with 26 home runs. Goodman hits the ball as hard as anyone, but only Coors is keeping his batting average afloat at .245 as he strikes out 32% of the time, but it's been an incredible season for Hunter Goodman thus far. Next, second baseman Cole Young helped the Mariners to win against the Angels, going 3-for-3 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 9 homers on the year now. First one went 412 feet at 105 miles per hour, and the second one went 406 feet at 107 miles per hour. Young has been streakier than expected. Usually players with low strikeout rates are pretty steady. He's below 20% in the strikeout rate department, but Young doesn't actually make an obscene amount of contact, so he's not your typical high contact guy, but he has figured out how to tap into his power more often this year. He's not a barrel machine per se, but his 114 mile per hour max exit velocity last year and his 111 mile per hour mark this year suggests there is more power than meets the eye. Young's made the most of his power by pulling the ball a lot this year, and there might be room for further growth as he's pretty significantly underperforming his expected metrics. T-Mobile Park likely plays a big part in that, as it's the worst offensive park for left-handed hitters in baseball, according to StatCast's Park Factors. Young is a great option in deeper leagues, but he may be too mid, more of a good at a lot of things, but not great at any one thing, to be a standard league relevant fantasy asset. Next outfielder, Brandon Marsh, did all he could, but the Phillies lost to the Pirates. He went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 2 runs batted in. He's up to 14 homers. First one went 389 feet at 102 miles per hour, and the second one went 416 feet at 102 miles per hour. Marsh is batting 322 on the season, which is the fourth best mark in MLB. He's also in the midst of his best offensive season overall, 883 OPS for Brandon Marsh. And while the batting average is dope, the power has been the most impressive improvement this year. Yes, we know his BABIP won't stick over 400, but don't expect it to come down too much because Marsh has literally one of the highest BABIPs in the history of baseball at around 375. And the stat is much more of a skills-based stat for hitters than we're used to for pitchers, as we usually regress that down to 300. So guys who hit the ball hard and have good speed like Brandon Marsh can run high BABIPs throughout their career. Also, Marsh is striking out less than ever, giving him even more to stand on in the batting average department. But back to the power, Marsh is 2 homers shy from tying his career high in homers, but there really aren't many changes to suggest he's going for it consciously. I think it's partly a product of him pulling the ball more, but it's mostly a result of him being super aggressive at the plate as he's swinging 10% more than he has throughout the rest of his career, which is putting him in better positions to attack hittable pitches rather than being behind in the count and having to chase bad pitches or being on his back foot and trying to protect. This is the best version of Marsh we've ever seen, and I really don't expect him to slow down that much. And lastly, we have outfielder Cam Smith, who did all he could, but the Astros lost to the Twins. He went 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 2 runs batted in. He's up to 11 homers. First one went 408 feet at 111 miles per hour, and the second one went 429 feet at 107 miles per hour. I've been waiting for Cam Smith to truly tap into his power. He's got incredible StatCast metrics with a 12% barrel rate and 115 mile per hour max exit velocity, but the real kicker is a 96th percentile 77 mile per hour average bat speed that suggests he has some of the best raw power in the game. Despite addressing his strikeout issues a little bit this year, Smith hasn't taken off. He does have a career high 11 homers already, but he's batting just 222 with a 685 OPS. However, his expected metrics suggest he's due for a blazing hot second half, and I'd be buying low on Cam Smith and giving him the runway to take off. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Aaron Nola, who did all he could, but the Phillies lost to the Pirates. He went 4 1/3 innings, allowing 8 hits and 7 earned runs, walking 2 while striking out 5. And you're wondering, why is this a notable performance? Well, Nola induced 23 whiffs with 33% CSW across 86 pitches, and he earned the gallows pole by leading baseball with those 23 whiffs. And rarely do you see such a high whiff total with such poor ratios. This was all about Nola cooking with his curveball and changeup, but having nothing to support them. The hook induced a whopping 13 whiffs with 48% CSW and 73% strikes, while the slow ball racked up 5 whiffs with 36% CSW and 79% strikes. However, everything else, namely fastballs, four seamers, and sinkers, combined for 18% CSW and just 44% strikes. His fastball inconsistency has been super frustrating this year, and it's really difficult to trust a pitcher who has the success rate of a coin flip. For the year, it's a 6.04 ERA and a 1.49 whip for Aaron Nola. And if you haven't given up yet, it's time to let go in standard leagues, but there might be enough juice to squeeze in deep leagues in Kansas City next. Next, we've got Casey Mize, who helped the Tigers to win in the Bronx, tossing 7 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit, walking nobody while striking out 10. He induced 13 whiffs with 38% CSW across 88 pitches, and he earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 38% CSW. I suggested to buy low on Mize after seeing increased velocity, tons of four-seam fastball and splitter whiffs, and a high strike rate on sliders after his last start, despite some poor ratios. But he got a rematch with the Yankees here, and he dominated them, tying his career high with 10 strikeouts, but the same stuff wasn't there. Mize's four-seam fastball fell back down to 93 miles per hour. His splitter field disappeared, returning just 43% strikes, and the whiffs didn't flow like they did last time. His slider was still intact, and it allowed him to take advantage of a passive Yankees lineup that allowed him to steal 19 called strikes with four-seamers and breakers while getting lucky with 11 outs on 12 balls in play, as well as returning a 67% put-away rate in two-strike counts. I still like Mize moving forward, but this wasn't a start of him vaulting himself into a stump. I'd love to see that four-seam fastball be over 94 miles per hour. We want to see whiffs and strikes on the splitter, and we want to continue to see that slider be the glue pitch that he's looked for throughout his career. However, we can still start Mize freely in Texas against the Rangers next. And lastly, we've got Sean Burke, who helped the White Sox to win in Baltimore, tossing 5 1/3 innings, allowing 4 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 3 while striking out 8. He induced 13 whiffs with 35% CSW across 89 pitches. Burke has displayed increased velocity and strikeout stuff in his past 3 starts, making him look like someone who should be rostered everywhere. He sat 94.5 miles per hour with his elite four-seamer through his first 14 outings, but he pumped it up to 96 miles per hour in this one, allowing the pitch to thrive upstairs with 8 whiffs and 85% strikes. And I think there was room for even more dominance from Burke, as a ridiculous 17 foul balls came on the heater for a bonkers 43% foul ball rate. And as that regresses, he should expect more whiffs and more efficiency, allowing him to produce ratios that fit his stuff while pitching deeper into games. The four-seamer has struggled to find support this year, though. We saw sliders step up the last 2 starts, but it disappeared here, and curveballs didn't step up in its place. Ultimately, a lack of reliable secondaries may prevent Burke from having consistent success or reaching an insane ceiling. But with his fastball at 96 with 19 inches of IVB, he doesn't need much help. His schedule is great as he heads to Cleveland next before getting the A's in Chicago afterwards. And I'm down to pick up Sean Burke for those and keep holding if the strikeouts keep flowing. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Paul Sewald worked around a 2-run homer for his 19th save. Louis Varlin recorded his 17th save with a scoreless 9th. Garrett Whitlock recorded his first save with a scoreless 9th as Aroldis Chapman was unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days and in 3 of the past 4. Jacob Latz had a perfect 8th and 9th innings for his 17th save. Trevor McGill pitched a perfect 9th for his 11th save. And lastly, Yoenndrys Gomez worked around a solo shot to get the final out of the game for his 9th save of the year. In terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Gregory Soto served up he actually just allowed 2 runs pitching the 8th up by 3. He was facing the middle of the order, so sort of used as a high leverage reliever. But maybe there will be some changes to the 9th inning due to Soto's recent struggles. Mason Miller attempted to escape a jam with nobody out in a tie game in the 9th, but he failed to do so. Luckily, the official score did not tag Miller with the loss. And lastly, Pete Fairbanks allowed a run at pitching the 9th up by 4. He hadn't pitched since last Wednesday, so this was a maintenance outing despite the close game. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Tuesday, June 30th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Tarek Skubal versus Cam Schlittler. That's going to be a great pitching matchup. 2 of the best pitchers in all of baseball squaring off, Skubal versus Schlittler. In terms of probable starters, we've got 6 guys in the auto starts tier, including both Skubal and Schlittler. We've got Christopher Sanchez versus the Pirates, Jacob deGrom in Cleveland, Joe Ryan in Houston, and Brian Wu versus the Angels. Our probably starts tier has 4 guys, and our questionable starts tier has 9, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Cade Cavalli in Boston. Cavalli is a little bit volatile when it comes to his start-to-start production, but his curveball is elite, and the Red Sox are a team that struggle against right-handed pitchers. We could see Cavalli do pretty well there. The strikeout ceiling is pretty dope. I'd also keep an eye out for Brandon Sproat versus the Reds. He just dominated with 10 strikeouts in his last start by turning to high four-seam fastballs, and we're hoping that this will be a continuation of the success we saw from Sproat last time out. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at White Sox and Orioles hitters in Oriole Park. We'll see Eric Fetty square off against Trey Gibson in that one. Both of those guys have not been great this year. I'd also look at Marlins and Rockies hitters in Coors Field, as we'll see Eury Pérez square off against Tanner Gordon in that one. And lastly, I'd target Dodgers and A's hitters in Sutter Health Park, as we'll see a pair of southpaws in Justin Robleski square off against Jeffrey Springs. So you want to target righties on the Dodgers and A's. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Yoendris Gomez has pitched on back-to-back days, so one of Andrew Morris or Taylor Rogers should be the top options for saves for the Twins on Tuesday. Louis Varland has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four, so one of Tyler Rogers or Jeff Hoffman should get the save if one arises for the Blue Jays. And lastly, Trevor Megill has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four, so expect Abner Uribe to be the closer for the Brewers on Tuesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.